We are 95.3 The Score. 95.3 The Score is your sports station. Log on and listen live at 95.3thescore.com.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Janet, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
And we welcome you to Sports Talk. It is the Thursday edition of the program. We've got a radio show just for you at the bottom of the hour. Her name is Miren Fader. She writes for Bleacher Report and a lot of other outlets. And she wrote a fantastic story on Sabrina. I read it, dropped her notes. I'd love to have you on the show. She got right back. Lo and behold, 4:30. If you want in, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. On Twitter, it's at 953thescore for the station. For the show and yours truly at SportsTalk953. For Nick, it is at Rick Nodgers. And if you've been paying attention to sports at all, it's unbelievable. It was 20 years ago today, and not that Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play, but the draft wrapped, the 2000 NFL draft, and Tom Brady went with the 199th pick to the, well, I think you know who drafted him. And what's crazier than the fact that he's still playing? You know, sometimes when you go back to a season, the names are really familiar. The MVP that year, Marshall Faulk. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Brian Urlacher. AP Defensive Player of the Year, Ray Lewis. The passing leader in just his third year, one fellow by the name of Peyton Manning. The rushing leader, his backfield mate, Edgerrin James. And the top receiver that year, by the way, the edge with 1,700 yards, Torrey Holt of the Rams. Still part of the greatest show on turf. 1,600 receiving yards. But the draft had an air of uniqueness to it in that the first two players were from the same college. Courtney Brown, a rush end from Penn State, and then Washington went linebacker LeVar Arrington. And by the way, we didn't fully know the Browns were the Browns then, but they were still very Brownsy because they went first the year before when they took Tim Couch out of Kentucky. But Courtney Brown played okay as a rookie. Then he got injured. He missed some more time over the years and ended up with the Broncos, was done by the age of 27. And, well, I'll tell you what, there weren't 198 better players than Brady. I mean, you know his career is remarkable because the ninth overall player in the draft is already in the Hall of Fame, which means he had to be retired for 5 years. Urlacher retired as a Hall of Famer in 2012. Brady's still playing. That's nuts. I mean, guys who went in that draft that had really nice careers, Sean Alexander. I mean, kind of a compact career. He went pretty much from like the best running back in the league to falling off a cliff and being out of football by 2008. Some guys who had longevity, John Abraham of the J-E-T-S, Jets. I mean, he was a really good player. I mean, he was a pass rush specialist. He ended up with 133.5 sacks. Then, of course, you get guys like R.J. Soward, who's, you know, a total bust. You know, I'm just trying to think. Aside from the guy I just mentioned, Urlacher. Hello, Steve. Sebastian Janikowski, by the way, in that draft as well. How about the times they are a-changing? One quarterback in the first round. And again, the Jets ended up with three draft picks in the first round that year. And they picked Abraham. They picked Chad Pennington out of Marshall, who I think played a year with Randy Moss at Marshall. Dennis Northcutt. Remember, I thought he was going to just be a terrorizing receiver coming out of Arizona on that great 98 team. But he had about 400 catches, so you wouldn't just poo-poo call him a bust or anything like that. But, you get down and you look at some of these guys and see the length of their career, and then you see guys who went maybe a little higher than they should have. I mean, you look at the first round, and, Brown was out of football by 05, Arrington by 06. Jamal Lewis, another one who fell into the running back trap. I mean, he was elite, a 2,000-yard guy, and just was beat up and done. Ron Dane, 7 years, that first year, made it to the Super Bowl as kind of, we're talking thunder and lightning. It was Urlacher and Tiki, right? Dane, I mean, and Tiki. Am I totally blowing this here? I might be talking out of my proverbial, well, you know what. Yeah, the 2000 Giants, who were taken to the Super Bowl by Kerry Collins, had Tiki and Dane. So, yeah, hey, I got one right. And also Monty Toomer. It's a good offensive team. They beat Minnesota, I think, 41-0 in the NFC Championship game. It's always fun to run through the draft. Trung candidate, who did not do all that much in the pros, another member of that great Arizona team. Interesting that the last pick of the first round, Trung candidate, first pick of the second round, his teammate, Dennis Northcutt. Todd Pinkston. You look at these guys who, went to Philadelphia. Ian Gold, remember the linebacker from Michigan who ended up having a really nice 7-year career, kind of compact. And Brad Meester, a center. Reuben Jones in the third round went to Detroit, and he wound up with an 8-year NFL career, ended up with 3,600 yards. Not a superstar, but it's not a bad way to make a living, 8 years in the bigs. Trying to pick out, I got to tell you, you look at these guys and, man, you get to the fourth round, Peter Sermon. Went late in the fourth round to Tennessee. Ended up in the league for 6 years. Had 253 total tackles. Yeah, this is a way to do a complete and total dumpster dive here and get yourself lost. Remember the quarterback who followed Peyton Manning at Tennessee? Peyton left and he won the first BCS championship. Yeah, he got drafted that year as well. And was out of the league, and now he's been an offensive coordinator at the collegiate level. T. Martin, Chad Morton out of USC. I mean, you think back to the, I'll tell you what, the quarterbacks in the sixth round. How about Mark Bulger? Played 9 years, threw for over 22,000 yards. Then there's also Spurgeon Winn, and then after Matt Bowen, safety, went to St. Louis out of Iowa. New England was next, and they picked Tom Brady. I always knew he was a sixth rounder. And then, there are some players in this. And one of our favorite guests went four picks later. He's now the fine radio analyst for Stanford football, Todd Husak, who's also a big name in Bay Area commercial real estate, was in that draft. I remember, if you're a Niner fan, you remember the guy they took out of Louisiana Tech where Bradshaw went to college? Tim Rattay, who actually kicked around for 6 or 7 years. But like I said, we're now into the seventh round here. Rattay, he ended up in 40 games, so nobody's going to mistake him for Joe Montana. But you could wind up getting lost here. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. What about USC quarterback JT Daniels? He has put his name in the transfer portal after a decent freshman year in 2018. I mean, he was thought to be maybe the next great USC quarterback, played as a true freshman. And then in the opener against Fresno State, he tears his knee up. And if you go by that philosophy of one door closes, another opens, well, it did, but not for that kid. Kedon Slovis came on and goes on to become the Pac-12 Offensive Freshman of the Year. But Daniels is an interesting case. Might be worth keeping an eye. First of all, he's a really good player. And second, I was reading Clay Helton, the Southern Cal coach, says it's not out of the realm of possibility. He's examining options, and I guess he could come back out of the portal. Is he being John Malkovich? I don't understand. Your guess is as good as mine. I guess for most of us, when we hear a guy's in the transfer portal or a woman player, that they're gone. And I guess I would be curious to know, has a big-time player ever gone into the portal, came out, stayed at school, and then went on to play great for a couple years for the school they nearly left? Is that a thing? Could you Google that? That seems like that's going to take a lot of keystrokes. Anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And yes, to those of you who have texted, for some reason, I kind of went nappy-nap on the text line. The special on the Pac-12 Network last night that I'm sure they're going to rerun, geez, Steve, especially with no games and limited content about Ruthie and Sabrina, Unfinished Business. It was fantastic. I mean, mega kudos to our friends at the Pac-12 Network. I mean, that was just a quality piece of documentary making. And, the interviews with not only Coach Graves, Coach Campbell as well, hearing from both Hebert's parents and Ionescu's parents, Eddie, obviously, who was a walk-on with the Ducks, hearing from him and just the competitive nature and the stories about the both of them and how, from Fairbanks, Alaska, Walnut Creek, California, meeting up in Eugene. And I think the most interesting part about that was the method and what they referred to as, Sabrina's dad was talking about her not deciding until like the night before summer school was going to start, and then having so many options, then narrowing it down to Oregon or Washington and deciding at the last moment to come here. It's something we've all said when she makes, a buzzer beater three or makes a crazy no-look pass or shrugs off a triple-double, that it's the most Sabrina thing ever. Well, he said to her, because of the way she processes things, that it was the most Sabrina thing ever. And on behalf of Oregon fans everywhere, thank you very much. And you look at – and Coach Graves brought up a good point, and – like he said in the documentary, because of what's happened since, I mean, great moment after great moment after great moment, from going back to the Elite Eight to going to the Final Four to all the incredible things that happened this year, plus the heartbreak and the tragedy of losing her friends, Kobe and Gigi, that you forget that they were not a lock to get in that first year. I mean, the reaction was very telling of the Ducks' hearing their name called for the 2017 Big Dance. I mean, there's excited reaction of, you know, we're in as a 2 or 3 seed. And then there's the reaction shot that they showed of, we're really in. This is really happening. Because if you remember, that year, I mean, they had 13 regular season losses. They went 8-10 in conference. You know, they had not turned Matthew Knight Arena into Fort Never Lose. They were pretty good. They were 10-5 at home. And, you know, they had one really good win here against Michigan State. They went on the road to that Hawaii tournament and lost to a really strong Mississippi State team. And then, you know, they started league play in trouble. I mean, Washington buried them. Washington State beat them by 16. They went down to Stanford, got waxed by 20. I mean, if you'd have done the proverbial stop action play right there and said this team is going to the Elite Eight, you'd be like, oh my God, could you be more of a homer? I mean, and in that Washington game, Kelsey Plum, you know, the all-time leading scorer in the history of the sport, went off for 44. So there were moments, you know, Sabrina hitting the her first buzzer beater to win back home at Berkeley. Then, you know, they went down to play a very good UCLA team, just a little more fast, a little more athleticism, got beat by 16. I mean, Oregon State beat them in back-to-back games, two close games here and there on a Friday, Sunday in late January by 3 and 7 points when the Beavs were, you know, a highly ranked team. Arizona State was ranked. And then late in the season, they beat UCLA. I remember thinking, that's big. Don't take that for granted. They rolled USC, and then – they got beat by Cal and Stanford to end the regular season, but they won 2 games in the tournament, including beating the 3 seed Washington. And that was an eye opener. That was a nail biter. And, you know, even though Stanford beat them for the conference title, you know, they got in, they were a 10 seed, and they had to go, if you remember, to play at Duke. And Duke was the 2 seed. But like Coach Graves said, the game against Temple, Ruthie made that bucket inside to give them the 71-70 lead. And the thing you love the most about her, and something we've talked about all season long with the analysts, with the coach, her hustle, her head in the game, her focus, the way she plays rim to rim. So she makes the bucket. No celebrating, busted her rear end, got down, and ended up blocking the game-winning shot. Got a piece of it, and they had they had such a cool shot from behind the Oregon bench looking down court. Temple races down, actually got what could have been a really good look off, but Hebert came from her facing down court, so she moved to her left, got a piece of the shot, and they won. And like Coach Graves said, instead of the Elite Eight, they're an afterthought, because as the tournament moves on, who the hell cares about who won the 7 versus 10 if the 10 got beat? You know, that's true to form. And then they beat Duke pretty handily. I mean, if you remember, watching that game on – it was a Monday – and they beat them by 9, and it was like, well, now wait a second. This team, who for a lot of people were still kind of finding their way towards this torrid love affair that everybody would have with this team and this program, it's like they went to Duke and beat Duke across the country by 9? Really? Okay, so they're playing. And then, of course, at the time, where they end up going for the regional to Connecticut. And, you know, in that game against the Dukies, Cazorla was huge. She hit 4 of 8 from downtown. Sabrina actually had a rough day offensively. She only got off 8 shots. She made some hay at the line going 6 of 8 and ended up with 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 13 points. Good all-around game, but it was Hebert with 20 points and 15 rebounds. And then they beat Maryland, and who was the 3 seed. And that was on ESPN proper, and that was a big deal. And you could see people starting to take a little bit more notice, because Sabrina had 21 points in that game, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, hit 3 of 5 from downtown. Bando hit some big shots. They had 5 players in double figures, including Audie Gilden, who was huge that game as well. And they wound up in the Elite Eight. What a great story. The special itself is just – it's more than just the basketball angle. It's some great shots of Sabrina as a kid. And just – I'll tell you what, she couldn't have been more than 12 in one of the photos. But just the way she handled the ball, it was like, oh, yeah, that's her. It was really cool seeing her get introduced at high school games and step back threes, and seeing Ruthie battling inside. And like everybody said about her, man, you could watch pivot players at any level, any size, any country. Does she ever not catch it clean? I mean, you throw her an entry pass, and over the years, whether it's been any of the guards from Maite or Mignon or Sabrina, it's just, I mean, the trust level. And obviously, these are all terrific ball handlers and unselfish players whose head is constantly in the game. But, man, they're showing some of these highlights, and it's just she's got stick-em hands. She's got really, it's one of the things that's going to stand out. And, now that the Liberty have moved up and has the number 9 pick in tomorrow's draft. By the way, the draft is less than 24 hours away. It'd be interesting to see if that plan included keeping peanut butter and jelly, as they call themselves, together, because, historically, you're not going to find many who do pick and roll better. And there's some other funny stuff I wanted to get to, because Sabrina, man, she's got a real dry wit about her. She just could matter-of-factly, kind of like she does, she matter-of-factly just cut you. She talked about, in the beginning, Graves wasn't so sure about her stylistically playing pick and roll, because she was a dribble drive player in high school. And plus they had Maite, who, and obviously an amazing point guard. But safe to say she caught on. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll have a Coors Light update. And then we're going to talk more Sabrina on this eve of the draft with a Miron Fader of Bleacher Report. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
And the Ducks have done the double championship for the second time in 3 years. Regular season champions and now Pac-12 tournament champions over Stanford. And they put a whooping on the Cardinal for the third time this year.
Yep, our own Terry Johns, the Oregon Sports Network. Hard to believe. Well, when you think about when that game took place, it seems like another lifetime ago, and it's like 5 weeks. All right, we welcome you back to Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score. Folks, we love having first-time guests. She has a tremendous piece posted about Sabrina on Bleacher Report. We've retweeted it. You can find it on her Twitter handle. Use at Miron Fader. It's on BleacherReport.com. Her website, MironFader.com. You may guess by now, Miron Fader joins us. Miron, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing during these unique times?
Unique is the key word, right? I'm good. Yep. I'm good. I'm leaning into gratitude. So thanks for having me.
We love this. It's an awesome piece. So I know you're in LA, but how about a little background? I know you're writing for Bleacher Report. You do a podcast. So where are you from? Where did you attend school? And, you know, a little Mirren backstory.
Yeah, I'm in LA. I'm born and raised here, one of the few non-transplants. I've played basketball all my life. Love basketball. I ended up playing my first year actually at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. But I really missed home, and so I ended up transferring to Occidental College, which is where I graduated in 2013, and really started shifting to sports writing. I mean, I've loved basketball, but I've loved writing even more, and so I thought, you know, merging the two of them together would be the best option. I started my career at the Orange County Register for 4 years, was freelancing a bit on the side for BR and ESPN, and then BR hired me a couple years ago. So thankful to be employed right now.
Yeah. Obviously, we live here in Eugene. We do a sports show, so we've witnessed the brilliance of UNESCO firsthand. But I'm curious, you write about a lot of subjects, some soccer, some football. Do you remember when Sabrina appeared on your radar?
Yeah, actually, I was freelancing for ESPN when I wrote a piece about Sabrina in high school when she was taking her time to make her decision. And I remember it was seen as such an anomaly. Like, why would such a high-rated prospect take her time? So that was the first time I profiled her. And then the last year, I profiled her for the first time for Bleacher. She was in the midst of that amazing season. And so I just thought, you know, what really stood out to me was not really what she does on the court, but what's going on in her head mentally. So I thought, okay, now is an interesting time to talk to an athlete of that type of obsessive mentality. So I just wanted to try it again.
Well, you nailed it. Obviously, in the wake of the crash that took the lives of 9 people and included Kobe and his daughter, a lot of people learned about that relationship. So in speaking with Sabrina, I guess, what struck you about the kind of relationship they had, his impact? And as she said, she's still not back to normal over this yet.
Yeah, you know, their relationship was so deep. I really didn't realize it, but they were like family. You know, it wasn't just superstar gives fellow up-and-coming superstar some pointers here and there. I mean, they were incredibly close. She saw a lot of her own passion in Gigi, you know, that I love basketball, I will do anything for this type of passion. And I think that brought them together. So, I mean, to say this was devastating would be an understatement. It's kind of like losing a parent almost. Not saying Kobe was like, you know, her parent, but really it's a figure that guides you, that understands you, that's always there for you. And then you wake up one day and they're not. And that really hurt her.
I'm talking with Mirren Fader, who authored this wonderful piece about Sabrina. Speaking of parents, you spoke with her dad, Dan, and, you know, people from our athletic department up here. And I guess, what did you learn about how she's kind of obsessive and basketball actually provided a way for her to maintain some level of control?
Yeah, Sabrina, the way Sabrina's mind works is that she's always feeling like she's about to lose something or she's, you know, inferior. So obviously we know she is incredible. She is always the best player on the court. But if you are inside her head, there's a voice telling her that she's not and that she's got to outwork everyone so that she can be. So it's this obsessive work ethic that just goes beyond, oh, I'll shoot before practice, I'll shoot after practice. Sabrina can score 30 points, have 10 assists, and still be angry at herself for missing a free throw. I mean, her standards for herself are so much higher than all of us mere mortals. So, you know, what I really learned is that for somebody that tries to control every element of the game and her life, she is really for the first time being in a situation where she has no control. Not only is organized basketball being taken away from her, her season, her storybook season for Oregon, their chance at a national title, but really also what's taken away from her is what we talked about, Kobe and Gigi. So how do you deal as a person so used to being in control when you've the first time in your life don't have any?
Yeah, it's, you know, you talk about the level of emotion this year from the glory, the success, you know, becoming the only 2,000, 1,000, 1,000 player. And as you mentioned, the tragedy that took her friends, then the virus canceling the tournament. And as you wrote, I mean, how is she still absorbing this? I think your direct quote was, you know, how deep are her cuts still?
They're really, really deep. And I think it's because the way that grief works is that, you know, you try to move forward with your day because you have to, right? She has responsibility. She's got to train. But it's almost like PTSD in a sense where these memories just pop up. And so the cutting deep happens over and over and over again. And the edge lessens a little bit as time goes on, but it'll just hit her at any moment. She'll hear Gigi's laugh or, you know, she'll be on her phone and somebody with a name that starts with a K will pop up and her mind thinks, oh, it's Kobe. And then she realizes, no, that's not reality, obviously. And you're back to your reality, which still hurts. So it's a process. She said it's a process that she thinks she will always go through. But I think that she is coming to terms with acceptance. It doesn't mean she's over it. It's just like, I accept all that has happened, and I didn't want this to happen. And it still hurts that all of this has happened, but, you know, Kobe would want me to think about, okay, what's next?
Being so focused, so driven, and she's somebody who follows a very strict routine. And you talked with one of the Duck assistants, Mark Campbell, said, I mean, basically, since she became an elite high school player, she's had a bullseye, which affected her sleep. So as you wrote about, how has this first ever break from basketball impacted her, you know, actually, I think you said allowing her to breathe?
Literally. Yeah. And I really do mean that sincerely, literally. This is the first time Sabrina has taken a breath. You know, I think when you're so used to carrying the weight of your team on your shoulders and expectations for yourself to be so great, it's like you get used to that weight, but you forget what it's like to not have it. And this is the first time she doesn't have it. And so, yeah, her shoulders are a little looser. She's actually sleeping. I mean, Sabrina is not just an insomniac. She will be up until 4 a.m. before games, just so nervous. Like she cannot turn off that obsessive, restless part of her. But now with nobody coming after her, as Campbell said, there's a calmness there. And it doesn't mean that she's at peace, but she's trying to find peace and sort of her life is slowing down to allow her to figure out some way, some method to get closer to finding peace.
Couple of final thoughts for Miren Fader of Bleacher Report. One more time back to that awful week. I mean, the death of Kobe and Gigi, then she played against Oregon State, spoke at the memorial, flew to Stanford. How does Sabrina kind of remember all of that massive whirlwind?
Well, that's the thing about it. She doesn't remember the actual games. And that is so telling for the amount of pain that she was in because, as we talked about, she's obsessive. She remembers every detail, literally everything that happens from start to finish, before the game, after the game. And she was so steeped with grief that it was almost like she blacked out. And so, you know, she does not remember the details of it, but she remembers how physically ill she felt. She felt so down that she could not bring herself to warm-ups. Literally, her body felt heavy. She had to stay in the locker room. So, but what she does remember is her teammates and her coaches carrying her. And it's usually the other way around. But Sabrina really learned that, you know, being a leader is sometimes letting go, letting others take the reins. And when she was able to do that, she still ended up, you know, being obviously the top performer.
And lastly, the end of your piece, where with so much happening, the season being canceled, thinking about what lies ahead starting tomorrow with the draft, you know, the part you wrote about, how did she actually just find some solace in just simply heading to an outdoor court just to shoot some hoops?
I mean, she really needed that so much. It was miraculous that one was open. And, you know, Sabrina just felt such gratitude for not just the hoop and the ball, but her hands, her wrists. It was like an outer body experience. It's kind of like, imagine breaking so many bones and you're finally back on the court and you're like, wow, look at what my body can do. Her breaks were not physical. They were emotional. They were mental. And so it was so wonderful for her to have this experience of, all right, even if I'm not perfect, even if life is really rough right now, even if I'm not healed from all these wounds, I have the chance to play basketball today, and any day that I can play basketball is a good day.
folks. She is Miren Fader. This article in particular was for Bleacher Report, but you can go to her website, MirenFader.com. It is a terrific piece. I really enjoyed it, and I really appreciate you finding some time to talk to us. And you be well, you be safe, and I look forward to chatting again down the road.
Anytime, anytime. Thanks for having me, and stay safe.
Okay, take care. Great stuff, Miren Fader. Check out the article. Seriously, it's a deep dive, information, a lot of heart, a lot of interviews with parents and coaches and fellow players. And like I said, I couldn't get enough of it. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. A quick shout out to our friends at Big Al State Farm, Big Al Eugene, online, the website.com, BigAlEugene.com. And the team at Big Al State Farm knows what we're all going through now with, hard times for many within our community. And so they're working to make sure that the new normal feels a little more normal. They're working remotely for you. Times like these highlight what really matters in our lives. And Big Al wants to make sure those things are protected. So if you're unsure about your current plan or what's protected, especially your family, your belongings, call or text the office. They're open Monday to Friday, 9 to 5:30, 686-1522. And again, because of the ongoing health concerns, there are changes to their normal business operation. They're requiring clients make an appointment to meet at the office. So again, 686-1522. That's a Big Al State Farm. And check it out online, BigAlEugene.com. All right. That was a great conversation. I really enjoyed that. She's a really good writer. I just discovered her 2 days ago, but I went onto her website and just read a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, she is a fine, fine journalist, and we appreciate her time. All right. Let's take a break. We'll be back with the home stretch of the 4 o'clock hour of Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
They really have been so adamant that they do not want to expand the playoffs, at least from the playoff perspective. Now, here's the thing. It was coming anyway at some point. But I do think that they are very specific to the fact that they like it being only 14. So going to 16 would be a dramatic change. And we know that the NCAA and the way that college athletics operates, a lot of times it's not a dramatic change. A lot of times it would be maybe some baby steps toward that change.
That would be one Laura Rutledge of ESPN talking about this annoying movement to expand the college football playoff and just aggravate me. So you got that going for you. It's not very nice. All right, folks. Welcome back. Great stuff there from Miren Fader. And we're talking how it was 20 years ago today. The NFL draft took place, and 199th pick, Tom Brady. Amazing, just looking back at some of that. We were discussing USC quarterback JT Daniels putting his name in the transfer portal. And among the stories that Nick has been talking about in his Coors Light updates, Jalen Green, one of the top recruits out there, a prolific prep player from actually, he's not prolific. That's where he went to high school. Prolific prep in Fresno. So he's taking this unique route. It's the NBA G League pathway. It's a reshaped NBA professional pathway program. It's an initiative that sources say will pay elite prospects about, I guess, $500,000, and provide a one-year development program outside of the minor leagues' traditional team structure. So he's bypassing college, and he will become the first participant in this pathway. And I thinking you could use logic and common sense here for players who normally, you know, going back to the early 2000s, would go directly from high school to the pros, like, you know, Garnett and Kobe and LeBron. This is going to happen, and it's probably going to become a little more commonplace. I mean, college isn't for everybody, and, you know, these guys, especially, you don't know what their background is, and they could obviously go ka-ching a little bit, make a few bucks, and then be in the draft. So ESPN, their 2020, ESPN 100, he's number one. So I don't know exactly where he was considering. And so what happened was the president of the G League is Sharif Abdul-Rahim. Remember him when he played at Cal? I think he might have got that drafted by then Vancouver. But he and Adam Silver have been working to eliminate some hurdles to convincing players uninterested in college hoops to not go overseas. So what happened was this National Basketball League of Australia offers a big salary increase, a structure that doesn't include playing in the G League. And I believe it included R.J. Hampton. And LaMelo Ball played professionally in Australia this year. And the two want to find what they're calling a financial and basketball structure to entice top prospects. And so this is basically what one of the articles called a breakthrough and gaining access to the top players who want an alternative to college. Because right now, the NBA has been talking with the Players Association. They've hit kind of a stalemate that would end the one and done. So this revamped pro pathway is kind of a bridge to what is believed will be the eventual elimination of the rule. I mean, American players, you have to wait a year after high school before entering the draft. So this way, he's part of a year-long developmental program, professional coaching, veteran players also in there, competition against the G League teams, some foreign national teams, and various NBA academies. So there you go. I'll be perfectly honest. I was not really aware of this. Does this ring a bell with a lot of you? Were you kind of familiar that this even existed? Because as for me, say NESPA.
Hi, Steve. I had heard that the NBA was like thinking of doing something like this. I didn't know that it actually went into action. I had thought that at some point the NBAPA, the NBA, the NCAA would work together to, you know, eliminate the one and done rule and maybe allow athletes to get drafted right out of high school and work out some sort of deal. And apparently they just and, you know, this was kind of thrown in as like a, hey, if you don't do this thing, like, we're gonna set up our own thing where we can legally pay players and you don't have to worry about it, and, you know, they won't be going to your system at all. So apparently it happened, and this Jalen Green guy is the first big player to actually make that decision.
Yeah, it's intriguing, and one would naturally assume that we're going to go back to the days where the one and done rule. I mean, the none and done rule. I'm just trying to think, when did that end? Direct from high school. I mean, we know LeBron was.
It was shortly after LeBron was drafted. I think it was maybe 1 year after that, maybe two. But he's one of definitely the last players to go straight from high school to the NBA. And well, his career has certainly, you know, been incredible. But I can't think of another person after him that also did that.
All right, here it is. In 2005, a couple of years after LeBron was taken first out of high school. The union and the NBA started discussing the possibility of an age limit. The league wanted 20. The union was against that. And then in the new collective bargaining agreement that was reached in the summer of 05, it required a minimum age to enter into the NBA be 19, 1 year removed from high school. So for the 2006 draft, there was no high school. Now, what happened was, you like in 2008, a guy like Brandon Jennings didn't go to college, went and played professionally overseas, and then he was eligible in 2009 and went 10th overall to Milwaukee.
Yeah,
then there were guys. Yeah,
I'm looking on Basketball Reference. I just did a quick search of, you know, guys who were drafted who didn't go to high school, and it is predominantly European players and non-Americans that are part of, you know, falling Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis, Nikola Jokic, just a bunch, you know, European guys that didn't have to come to American high school, and they played Euroball for a year once they were age eligible. Because yeah, like other than Brandon Jennings, like you mentioned, there aren't a lot of guys that were even getting drafted after LeBron went. So this is obviously something that had its effects in one way or another.
Yeah, well, it's probably going to alter the face of drafts moving forward. So we'll keep an eye on that. And I don't know when the NBA's next collective bargaining comes up, but I'd imagine it has to be part of that. We know that they just hammered out a deal in football. So the NBPA is the site I wound up in, and that looks like that might be too much of a deep dive down the rabbit hole for me to try to get in the next minute. So with all of that said, looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour, the Thursday edition of Sports Talk. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the second part of the press conference that Sabrina Ionescu did with the media earlier this week. We played part one yesterday. We'll play part two at the bottom of the 5 o'clock hour. And then, of course, you know, tomorrow by this time, we will know the destination. I mean, it seems like it's a lock. It's going to be the New York Liberty. And it's going to give us a little taste of, I think, how semi-surreal this is going to be with everybody at a remote location. And then a week from today, the NFL draft is going to be really intriguing to see how they pull that off. So hang tight. The 5 o'clock hour, Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?